Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Aideen Finnegan. Today, we'll be discussing all things beauty with the Irish Times new beauty writer, Simone Gannon. Since the new year, Simone's been writing her weekly column covering everything from how to keep your skin hydrated in this changeable weather, her experience undergoing the vampire facial, and why we're now all obsessed with scalp care. Simone is also a content creator, and you can find her on Instagram at Simone Scribes. She's from Galway, but she has spent several years living and working in the Middle East for the likes of Time Out and Grazia, not just in Dubai, but in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia too. Writing about beauty for more than a decade, she says it's been part of her life for as long as she can remember. So in this conversation with Roisin, she looks back on her earliest beauty influences, her grandmother, talks about the many different strands to her career, and she shares her top beauty buys that she repurchases time and time again.
Simone, thank you so much for coming on the Women's Podcast. Now, you started at the Irish Times beauty writer in January this year, but you've been writing about beauty and makeup and all those brilliant things for 14 years now. And you say that beauty is something that has been part of your life for as long as you can remember. So what are those early memories of beauty for you?
I think my very first key memory is related to my grandmother, my mother's mother. She was an exceptionally elegant, eloquent, refined Cork woman, and she was very passionate about her evening skincare routine. It's something that I witnessed from a very young age and was fascinated by. It involved a beautiful kind of silk dressing gown that she had. She would sit at her table and she would apply her beloved Pond's cold cream. This was the key element of the recipe for her skincare, and it was really kind of a key moment, I would say, for me, because it had different elements in it that impacted me in later years, you know, that you don't realize at the time. But it was not just the process of having a skincare routine, applying the product, but it was the fact that she took time out for herself to care for herself, to show respect to herself, essentially put aside this little bit of time for herself just to feel good, to look after her skin. And I loved watching it. I loved watching her do that routine. She had incredible skin. Her sister had incredible skin, and they both had silk pillowcases, which is wild now when I think about it, because that is such a trend now. But back then, it was not a trend. And so they were ahead of their time. And yeah, it really impacted me. She never missed that evening ritual, whether it was in her own home or whether she was visiting us. It was a really important thing to her, and that had a huge impact on me. And that was my sort of, I suppose, introduction to what we now refer to as the self-care aspect of beauty.
Because that can be kind of derided or trivialized by people who don't really understand or dismiss the importance for many, many women of, as you say, that self-care, or just a sort of a slash of red lipstick, and how much that can kind of cheer somebody up when, as they go out to face the world. What are your views on that, on the kind of attempt maybe to dismiss beauty as irrelevant and trivial?
I think when people attempt to trivialize beauty or dismiss it, to me, it just demonstrates this, that they don't understand it. They don't understand the power of beauty. They don't understand the impact that it can have on a person's life, on a person's day to day, on how they feel about themselves. For me, it is, and has always been, as much about the products as it is about the time, as it is about the ritual. Whether your thing is skincare, or whether your thing is a really good red lipstick, like you said, or whether you love doing a full face, it's that act of knowing that you have something that makes you feel great, that makes you feel like you, that helps you sort of come back to yourself in the midst of, you know, our crazy, stressful lives that we're all living. And I think in a way, I kind of feel sorry for people who don't understand the power of it, because it really is such a positive thing to be able to do such a small act, like a skincare routine, like wearing your favorite red lipstick, like whatever it is. And that changes how you feel about yourself. It can change how your day goes. It can change how you interact with others. And most of the people you come into contact with have no idea that that's your suit of armor. That's your tools that you use to feel like yourself. And so I really think people should just not underestimate that. I think it makes such a big difference.
And equally for women, and there are some who just don't buy into that, who don't kind of go down the road of makeup or skincare, or it doesn't turn them on, so to speak. That's okay too. I suppose the thing is that it's a complete choice. Maybe there's an element of the patriarchy having kind of come in and told women what way they need to look. But hopefully these days it's a little bit more take it or leave it. You don't have to buy into it if you don't want to.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that statement. I think that beauty is very individual. It's very personal, and it can mean many things to one person. It can mean very little to the next person. And I think that's the amazing part of beauty, is that you, like you said, you can take it or leave it. It's entirely up to you.
Tell me about your teenage beauty years. Were you always brilliant at putting on makeup, or did you go through what many of us did, the sort of line of foundation that wasn't very good, or trying to do it cat eye and being disastrous? I mean, you're younger than me, but what was your kind of experimentational phase, I suppose?
I think for me, when I think about my teenage years, there's sort of one. No, actually, there's two brands that really epitomize that era. And that is Max Factor Pan Sticks, which I was given by my other grandmother, who absolutely loved pan sticks. And I thought, this is brilliant. This is like putting polyfiller on your face. You know, this is what an incredible product. So it was Max Factor Pan Stick all the way. And then in sort of the latter part of my teenage years, it was Miss Selfridge's makeup range. They brought out, really interestingly, again, how, you know, beauty and trends and products, it's also cyclical. At the time, Miss Selfridge brought out stackable pots of eyeshadow, cream lipstick, glitter for your eyes, the whole lot. And now, of course, stackable pots are very cool.
Trini London is
really cornered that market. And It was these stackable pots I thought were brilliant. They were bright blue, glitter, luminous pink. I mean, it was really horrendous. I used to trowel them on before, you know, getting on the bus for school or whatever it was, but it just made me feel great. And I thought that was great. And, you know, they were the kind of two key ones. And then I think, like everyone else, there was certain products that we're all familiar with, like Rimmel mascaras were always around, you know, there was key ones there. And I think really my approach to beauty then was just kind of slapping it on, you know, as heavy as I could. I was not interested or aware, certainly, of skincare. Not really. I mean, I wash my face and whatever, but it was kind of a means to wearing makeup. It wasn't anything I was sort of very interested in. So it was, I mean, that era for me was haphazard and blue and glittery, I would say.
And it's such a contrast, isn't it, to, like, I have two 14-year-olds and, you know, I'm just astounded at the fact that they're at 14, they're interested in sort of skincare regimes, and they talk me through all these things that they're doing. And I just find it fascinating, because it was much more hapdash, as you said, when I was younger. But because of YouTube and because of all these tutorials, there's a lot more pressure, I think, on young women now to kind of get it right really early.
There is a lot more pressure, and it's kind of a double-edged sword as well with social media, because in one way, they are sort of learning about skincare and the benefits and, you know, to wear sunscreen every day earlier. And that can only be a good thing. But equally, what's coming hand in hand with that is just a deluge of products and ingredients and 15 steps and using exfoliating acids and this and that and this. And that, I don't think, has been the best. And I think there's more and more conversations coming up about that now in media, about how parents don't necessarily understand the strength of some of these products that their kids are asking for, because a lot of the brands they're choosing are sort of cute looking and brightly packaged, and you know, they are home to quite strong assets. And so we're dealing now with kids who really don't need skincare, with the exception of, you know, a nice cleanser to wash their face and, you know, maybe sunscreen. You know, but we're dealing now with little kids wanting to have 6-7 step skincare routines, and so that is an issue. So we're getting the benefit of the earlier education, but then the knock-on effect is sort of overdoing it.
Yeah, I remember last year I was in London with my daughters, and we went to somewhere like The Ordinary or somewhere like that, and I ended up sort of, I said, okay, no, you can get something, but it has to be something that's appropriate for your age, and there's no point just wasting money on. So that the staff were very helpful actually, and when I told them their age and they looked at them, there wasn't really much now, in fairness, in the whole shop that they said would suit them, and they were very honest about that. But I think a lot, yes, of the times parents maybe are letting them spend money on stuff that actually they shouldn't be using. So it's really important to be quite vigilant about that, I think. Because to me, that's a waste of money when they could be spending it on, as you said, a nice cleanser or something that will actually help, or something for maybe teenage spots or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I think the sort of urge in terms of shopping and wanting to buy nice products often ends up in the department store. And that, you know, generally the skincare products in there are a little bit more expensive and maybe slightly more complex in their formulas and not necessarily designed for younger skin. Whereas there are brands in all of our local pharmacies that are actually doing a really good job of, you know, appealing to that age range and that are affordable for parents to buy, that are good for the kids' skin as well.
Can you name a few of those? Because that's really interesting. Just going to your local pharmacy and picking up stuff that's A, cheap, and then also will actually, yeah, do the things that are useful for younger skin.
Yeah. So one of the brands that I think are doing an exceptional job, which my son actually uses as well, and he's 11, is CeraVe. So CeraVe have a really great, gentle range of products that are loaded with ceramides. So they're just very gentle, very hydrating on the skin, very little actives. You know, it's just very simple skincare. So there's one cleanser in particular, it's called CeraVe Hydrating Cleanser. There's two, one is foaming, one is non-foaming. It's the non-foaming one. It's exceptionally gentle, suitable for, you know, preteens, teens, and also just a great introductory cleanser for anyone who wants to start getting into skincare. And equally in the same range, they have great moisturizers. Again, really lightweight, just have ceramides and hydrating ingredients. They have the same moisturizer with sunscreen, so you can have SPF 30, I think it is, SPF 50. And we're talking, you know, less than €10 for the cleanser, more or less. Similar with the moisturizer, a little bit more. I think the sunscreen is a little bit more. But these are very affordable products. And if you go to somewhere like Boots, for example, they're often on 3 for 2. So you can, you know, kit your preteen or your teen out with 2 or 3 products, and it will just save you a lot of money.
That's brilliant. Well, we're going to talk about sort of skincare through the ages, and we've started there with teens, and we'll go on to 20s, 30s and 40s and beyond. But before we do that, maybe we might look at how you actually got into beauty, because that's not where you started out. So give us a little potted history of your career, maybe before beauty and then
yeah,
in the start of it.
So I have always been interested in beauty, always been fascinated by it. Like I mentioned, my grandmother earlier, you know, she was the first one that sort of piqued my interest. And then in my kind of teen years, my godmother was a makeup artist for, I think it was YSL at the time. She used to bring me beautiful little samples here and there. And so I got into that. I was using my Miss Selfridge, my Pantstick. I always had a real interest. I always wanted to try the latest things, the latest trends and so on. And it wasn't until I was in my, I suppose, early 20s that I sort of thought, maybe I could do something in this. Maybe I could have a career in beauty. I didn't know what that would look like. Maybe it was makeup. I didn't really know. And so this kind of idea was marinating my head. And then by the time I got to my mid-20s, my husband and I just got married. My husband and I went overseas for a couple of years. And I decided I was going to train to be a makeup artist. This was my opportunity to do it. I had a little bit of time and we had no kids yet. And I thought, this is it. So I trained to be a makeup artist with Makeup Forever, actually, in Singapore, which was an incredible experience. And I worked quite a lot after that in TV commercials. I did weddings. I did some print work. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And in our travels, we sort of met lots of really interesting people, and we moved around. We ended up in the Middle East. And at that point, I had started a blog, which was a brand new, you know, it was a whole new world. I started a blog. an American friend of mine who I met in Singapore had a great blog where she wrote about moving to Singapore and living in Singapore. And I was fascinated by this. I'd never heard of a blog. What does it mean? How does it work? And she said, you should start one and write about beauty, because I was buying lots of really cool, interesting products that weren't available at home. And I was trying to tell my friends about them. And she said, you should channel that into a blog and put it in the blog. So I started the blog, and it's still alive years and years later. It's still going. And that sort of brought me into the beauty writing sphere. And I did a little bit of freelance writing here and there. And then I ended up having my son, and I needed a sort of more stable career. Beauty is fantastic, especially makeup artistry, but it is full on, and it's a lot of evening work and weekend work. And so I started doing more and more beauty writing. And then before I knew it, I was fully into the publishing world and fully had my feet under the table and absolutely loved it. And after a couple of years, I decided to sort of change tack slightly again, and I branched out into online, online marketing, digital marketing, and still was writing on the side, still had my blog going, and it's just never gone anywhere. You know, despite the different things I've done over the years, it's always been a constant in my life, writing about beauty, talking about beauty online, whatever it may be. It's just something I've never, ever got tired of, despite the various other things I've done. But yeah, so that's kind of the short story. I also have a degree in psychology, and that was sort of a brief thing. I thought, you know, once I was trained in psychology, I had a vision of becoming a counselor. I thought this would be great. And I had the chance to sort of work alongside a couple of different psychologists who were great, and realized that it was very emotionally tough and not something, unfortunately, that I would be able for. And so I kind of parked that and continued on my beauty journey.
Let's get back onto that beauty. And we are going through the ages. And one of the things that I don't know anything about, so I'm hoping you can clear up for me, is that apparently women in their late 20s, early 30s should be using retinol or retinoids. So will you first of all just explain what they are and why they're important, and just make sure we know that it's not just some crazy fad. It's an actual good thing for people to start doing in their 20s.
So retinoids are vitamin A, so they are the gold standard of anti-aging. They are one of the most incredible ingredients, products that you can use to increase cell turnover. So they're brilliant for fine lines, for wrinkles, for pigmentation, for just generally improving the health and rejuvenation of your skin. Retinoid is the sort of family name. So that's the overarching name of all vitamin A, and vitamin A derivatives is retinoids. And underneath retinoids, you have all the different types and the different strengths. So retinol is one of the retinoid family. Other members include retinal or retinaldehyde, as it's often referred to, retinal esters, which are the least powerful, the weakest strength. And then you also have prescription strength retinoids like tretinoin or TRET, as people often refer to it, which is available from your GP or dermatologist. So it's kind of widely recommended that sort of from your mid-20s onwards, this is when the processes in our system sort of start slowing down somewhat. So the repair isn't as strong, consistent as it used to be when we were younger. And so to try and counteract that, we use retinoids. So they speed up cell turnover and in turn give us all the benefits for our skin that I just mentioned. So they are a great product to introduce to your skincare routine from your mid-20s onwards, and at any age, you know, you can bring them in at any time. The sort of difference, I suppose, is knowing what the different ones are and what the different strengths are. So the prescription strength obviously is the most powerful, the most potent, and as a result, the most irritating. Underneath your prescription strength, you have retinal or retinaldehyde, which is sort of the next rung on the ladder. And that is, I think it's approximately 11 times more potent than retinol. So very potent again, and again, it can be quite irritating. And then below retinal or retinaldehyde, you have retinol, which is the one that we are most familiar with. Most brands have it. It's in most chemists and everywhere you go.
Name some products that would be in, that would be kind of, that maybe wouldn't hear retinol, but would hear some other brand names or.
Well, they're usually called retinol. So okay. They're usually like La Roche-Posay retinol or Paula's Choice Retinol. So they usually actually use that name in the product name. And retinol is widely available. Most people are very aware of it. Most brands have a retinol product, be that serums, eye cream, moisturizers, whatever it may be. And then within that, you have different percentages of that retinol. So the rule generally when using any retinoid product is to start slow and use a low percentage. So that is to say you use one of the lowest percentages of retinol and you introduce it into your routine slowly. So you do this to kind of as much as you can reduce irritation and get your skin used to the product. And then over time you increase. So if you take something from the high street, for example, like La Roche-Posay or Paula's Choice, and you can look for the lower percentage. So you could buy a 0.2% retinol serum or a 0.1%. And then when you use that, you could move up to 0.2%, 0.3%, and so on. It is an amazing product, but it is not for everyone. You know, it's, I think there's a real sort of obsession with you have to use retinoids. If you're not using retinoids, you're missing out. But actually, they don't work for everyone. Some people have very sensitive skin and can't tolerate them. Or you try and you try and you try to introduce it and it's just very difficult. And there's great sort of alternatives to retinoids out there as well. So there's kind of plant-based alternatives like bakuchiol is a very popular one. And then peptides are also an amazing one. They also work on a cellular level like retinoids, but they are very well tolerated. They're also suitable if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. So, you know, in summary, I suppose, retinoids are an amazing product to introduce to your routine, but it really depends on, you know, your skin type and your tolerance level and your brand preference, if you have any, and how much time you have to spend slowly bringing in a product and being quite methodical about it and how much you want to spend. And, you know, there's a lot of different factors to consider, but they are great products.
And you mentioned anti-aging, but I know that you were kind of more interested in aging well. I mean, aging is a natural thing. The idea of anti-aging, I always find hilarious because it's kind of like against a very natural thing that's going to happen to all of us. And I know this, you know, we want to sometimes wrinkles or we want to counteract certain effects of aging. But talk a little bit about that because we are kind of going through beauty to the ages. I mean, there's times in our lives just naturally that our skin is great. And as you say, then the skin's ability to kind of regenerate and all that fades over time. But there's no harm in being a woman with wrinkles or being a woman who doesn't look like 10 years younger than they are.
I do think the industry as a whole is slowly trying to sort of change the narrative around that. You know, anti-aging isn't really a nice word. There's nothing wrong, like you said, with aging. In fact, it's a privilege. You know, the longer we are here, the more life we get to experience. So as much as possible, I like saying aging wisely, because I feel that as we get older, we are just getting wiser. And for me, as I age, and something I like to talk about a lot is, you know, it's about feeling good. It's about your skin looking good. It's about your foundation going on nicely. It's about having a little bit of a glow. It's about having, you know, as much kind of plumpness as you can manage and sort of feeling like the best version of yourself. I don't think there's anything wrong with fine lines and wrinkles. I actually think they're quite nice. I love seeing, you know, like crow's feet around the eyes or smile lines. I just think they're lovely. They're a lovely characteristic. They show that you are living, you know, that you're enjoying your life. And so I would fully agree with you in that I don't like the anti-aging term. I do think, you know, we are making an effort to try and move away from that somewhat. And, you know, women are aging beautifully. It's how you feel as you age. I think that's really important. It's keeping those little routines going, using your products that make you feel good, you know, and obviously all the other important factors like nutrition, exercise, and so on. But it's about feeling as good as you can for as long as you can, not trying to stop yourself at a place in time and sort of maintain that look, because it's just, it's not going to work. And most of the time, it doesn't look great either, you know.
Another word that I keep hearing and someone told me about on the podcast is slugging. It doesn't sound like a very nice word, but it's an effective way to add more moisture into your skin. Is that right? And tell me about slugging, because it's kind of weird sounding.
Yeah, so
it's not to do with slugs, is it?
Nothing to do with slugs, no. But it is it's a funny name, isn't it? It's a funny term when you think of slugging. So slugging is essentially the act of creating a barrier on your skin that allows your skin to repair and heal itself underneath. So years and years ago, mentioning my grandmother again, that generation were actually slugging before it was a thing. You know, they were applying thick layers of occlusive creams like Pond's Cold Cream, like the Nivea cream. And that, you know, obviously was moisturizing their skin, but it was also forming a barrier because it's a thick cream. And so when they went to bed, their skin was able to repair underneath while they slept, protected by this barrier. And so we're doing it now again in different forms. Now, the main sort of products that people are talking about when it comes to slugging is Vaseline. So it's about using an occlusive product. So something thick like a balm. So Vaseline is one. Eucerin Aquaphor is another one. Elizabeth Arden 8-Hour Cream. There's lots of different ones. And the idea is that if your skin needs some TLC, if it's dry, if it's flaky, if you have some patches, you can then slug your skin to give it that intense repair time that it needs. So before you go to bed, you would do your normal skincare routine. You would make sure not to use any actives in that routine because obviously you're trapping them close to the skin and you don't want to do that because that can be quite irritating. So you do like a gentle cleanse, you do your hydrating serum, you might apply your normal moisturizer, and then over that, you apply your occlusive balm. Now, it's not great for pillowcases, but it's great for your skin. And you can do it all over your face, but you can also spot slug. So, you know, a common area we'd have for dryness is around the sides of the nose, especially during winter, right? We all have colds. You might have dry patches on your elbows. You might have dry patches on your knees. And so you can apply your little bit of cream and then you apply your balm over that. And it just stays there as a barrier while you sleep. And in the morning, your skin is significantly fresher, more comfortable and repaired.
Okay. Talk to me about double cleansing. I've never quite got into it, but it just sounds like anything double sounds like double the work. But do you recommend that as a thing to do, double cleansing?
I do. I think double cleansing is very important. And I know a lot of people say, well, I don't wear makeup. You know, do I still need to double cleanse? Well, the idea is that you should really be wearing sunscreen every single day. So it's important to break that sunscreen down and remove it at nighttime. And the first cleanse is for that reason. It's to break down what you have on your skin and remove it. So break down makeup and remove it, break down your sunscreen and remove it. And then the second cleanse is to cleanse your skin. So it's about making sure that your skin is properly cleansed, it's balanced, you've removed any products, any dirt, any grime, and then your skin is very clean, very balanced, and ready for your serums and your moisturizers. You know, a double cleanse makes your other products more effective, essentially. It helps them work better because they're being applied to a very clean canvas.
Okay. So definitely worth a try.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it. What are the things that you would use products for double cleansing?
So usually with the first cleanse, you would use something like a balm or an oil. So you could use an oil cleanser or a balm to oil cleanser. It's great for really breaking down those products. And then your second cleanse, you would use something a little bit lighter. So it might be a cream cleanser. It might be a milk-based cleanser. Just something a little bit lighter and fresher that doesn't sit on your skin when you're finished.
Okay. Now, talking about women as they age, then getting into the 30s, 40s and 50s, what kind of skincare priorities should women have then and what changes?
So I think two things that are kind of constant is, you know, keeping your skin as hydrated as you can all the time. Hydration is the solution to a lot of issues we're facing, you know, dehydrated skin, fine lines caused by dehydration, uncomfortableness, tightness and so on. So hydration is key and something that we should focus on all the time. Sunscreen is another constant. That's something that just stays the same regardless. As we get older, when we're younger at any stage, we should use sunscreen every single day. And then I think as you sort of progress through the different decades, like I mentioned, bringing a retinoid in can make a big difference. So, you know, you don't have to do it as soon as you turn 25, but if you, you know, want to bring one in and you think it would fit in your routine and you have the spends to do it and you know what brand you want to use, bring that in and use that as well. So that would be a nighttime product. And another great product to use is an antioxidant serum. So that's something that you would use every single morning. So the most sort of widely studied and popular antioxidant that we're familiar with is vitamin C. So you would use a vitamin C serum every morning, and that has a great effect on the skin in terms of brightening and hydrating the skin and just kind of protecting your skin from environmental aggressors. So a simple routine for me looks like a very light daily cleanser. You would then use your antioxidant serum, so your vitamin C, for example, and a hydrating serum. and then your moisturizer sunscreen. That is a great balanced skincare routine for anyone of any age, any skin type to use. And then you can bring in the extras as and when you need to, as and when you want to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, you're writing in the Irish Times for us, and one of the things that caused a bit of a stir was you getting a vampire facial. What yes. is a vampire facial and how did you get on with it? It sounds like one of those crazy things that people in California do. And what are you doing?
The vampire facial actually has been knocking around for quite a long time now. I think it was actually Kim Kardashian who first brought it into the mainstream media. And it's funny because some of the skin doctors I'd speak to, they actually hate that it's called the vampire facial because it's obviously a lot more impactful and important than that. So essentially, what a vampire facial is the use of PRP. So PRP stands for platelet-rich plasma. It is a treatment that has been around for a very long time. I think the first use of PRP in medicine certainly was in the 80s in an open heart surgery. And PRP is derived from our own blood. So in order to have the treatment, a vial or two vials of your blood is drawn. The blood is put into a centrifuge. It's spun for a couple of minutes and your plasma is extracted from the blood. It looks like a fine gold liquid. And essentially what the plasma does is tell your cells that are not working as hard to get back to work. So cells that might have become lazier as you've got older or slower, it essentially stimulates them to get back to work. So it has amazing applications in cosmetic dermatology. So the facial I had was sort of two-pronged. First, the plasma was extracted from my blood, and then I had microneedling done, which is an amazing treatment for plumping the skin, treating fine lines and wrinkles and so on. But the plasma was microneedled into my skin. And then the remaining plasma was injected into my skin. So it is as complex as it sounds, it's actually a very natural treatment because it is your own plasma that you are sort of, you know, recirculating back into your system in order to plump and rejuvenate the skin. It is an incredible treatment, truly. And PRP has such huge uses outside of cosmetic dermatology. You know, it's used in dentistry to rebuild bone. It's used in joints, especially in athletes and so on, to sort of repair and speed up recovery. It's an amazing treatment. It sounds crazy. And like I said, the vampire facial label, I suppose, kind of dramatizes it somewhat, but it is essentially a dose of you. It is a regenerating, rejuvenating treatment. And you're
a proponent of it. I mean, it costs around 500 or 600 quid. You got it for free because you were doing an article.
Yes.
So that's full disclosure, but it is an expensive thing.
It is an expensive treatment, but if you are someone who is interested in having these treatments, or you're someone who's very passionate about skincare and so on, and you're not sure that you want to go down the route of injectables, for example, like anti-wrinkle injections or dermal fillers or so on, you want to focus on rejuvenating your skin, it's a treatment that you might have once a year. So it's actually not in the realm of other sort of injectable treatments we'd be familiar with, where you might get them every 3 to 6 months. This is kind of an annual treatment that continuously gives you benefits, because PRP doesn't go away. It doesn't disintegrate. It continues to work with your skin.
So do you think you'll be getting it again, Simone?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, I loved it. The results were amazing.
Now, in some places, it can feel as if staff are more interested in earning commission, whether that's by selling you another series of treatments or trying to sell the salon's own products at the end of the treatment. How do you feel about the beauty industry sort of capitalising on women's insecurities with what are usually very expensive treatments and maybe treatments that aren't necessarily relevant to that person?
I think that is a disappointing aspect, I suppose you could say, of the industry. I do think that it is unfortunate. I understand, you know, in certain cases why it happens, especially when it's coming from a clinic that you're going to have certain treatments. You know, while the staff might be fantastic and the treatments might be fantastic, it's difficult for them. They are trying to, you know, and being told to promote and sell certain products. And if you're someone who doesn't know a lot about skincare and you want to go and have a treatment, you know, of course you're going to feel that pressure that you should be using these products, that you're missing out if you're using those products. And I do think that is a pity. And I'm not sure it's something that's going to change quickly, to be honest. I think we need a lot more education and know-how and open discussions online about skincare and the simplicity of it and how powerful that simplicity can be, that it doesn't need to be a million steps and you shouldn't feel pressurized into using a ton of different products. But a lot of it, to be honest, I think is kind of a hangover from how things used to be back in the day. You know, there, if you look, you know, back at our parents' time, our mothers, certainly if they were using skincare, a lot of the time they were using the same brand. They had 4, 5, 6 products from one brand and that was it. They would never use anything else. That was unheard of, to mix and match brands. That's very commonplace nowadays, but people are still experiencing that hangover where they're being told, well, if you're using this brand, you need to use steps 1 through 6 to achieve the results. And that's just not the case. It's just not the case anymore. Everyone's skin is different and your skin changes month to month, year to year, depending what stage of your life you're in. So the products you're using, you know, aside from the basics, like I said, a nice cleanser, a hydrating serum, your sunscreen, you know, you might not always be able to tolerate that retinoid. You might not always be able to use that antioxidant serum. And so it's important to kind of, in my view, balance out what you're using, you know, mix and match different brands. Don't be afraid to go into the chemist and check out the products in there. You know, good skincare doesn't have to be expensive. And I think the more we talk about this, the more we write about it, the more we talk about it online, the more empowered women will be to know when they're in a clinic, I don't need to buy all these products, or thanks very much for the information. I'm going to go away now and think about it and research it and see which ones I like and do I need them.
Let's talk about makeup, because we haven't really so far, apart from the odd bit of talk about red lipstick. But yeah. Over the years, 14 years you've been in beauty, I mean, I'm really interested in the new things that come along. Like you've talked a lot about new Irish creators like Pip O'Connor and Sculpted by Amy. And it's great to see Irish women coming out with these brilliant products that are really popular and really women are really loving. We'll go on to them in a bit. But what about those hero products, I suppose, for you? The ones that you kind of always have, that you go back to, that sort of stand the test of time. What are your favourites? What ones do you recommend to people time and time again?
There's a couple of, I suppose you'd consider them, you know, older and recent classics. So I would describe them products that I just love and repurchase all the time and use all the time. So probably the first one that comes to mind is my mascara. So I've been using one mascara for nearly 8 years now. It is L'Oreal mascara. It's called Lash Paradise. It is truly one of the best mascaras I've ever used. And very affordable. Depending on where you buy, it's anywhere between 13 and 17 euro. It's incredible, an incredible, incredible formula. And I've tried a lot of mascaras. I've tried high end, you know, lower end. I've tried them all. And I think it's just phenomenal. And it's one that I repurchase all the time. Another makeup product that I love and has been around for a long time and has gone through many name changes, actually, is Chanel's. It used to be called Soleil de Tan. So it was the bronzing cream. And now it's rebranded to, I think it's Le Beige Bronzing Cream. And it is just a classic product, works for everyone, beautiful to use. It's very kind of experiential. You use it, you feel quite fancy. It looks beautiful on the skin. That's one that I love. My mum uses it as well. And like I said, it's gone through many changes, but it's always been there. Thank God, it hasn't really gone anywhere. Another one that I love is Elizabeth Arden 8-Hour Cream. I think that is just brilliant. You can do a million things with it. It's always around. I have the lip balm. I have the balm in the pot. I have the hand cream. I now have the body cream. It's a brilliant, brilliant product. You know, chapped lips, dry patches, elbows, knees, anywhere, you know, or even I've slathered it on my son over the years, you know, for various scratches and bruises and things like that. And again, it's just a brilliant, multi-use, reliable product. You know it's going to work. You know it's going to do what you need it to do. So there's definitely, there's probably more that I'm forgetting.
But what about eyeliner or some blusher, cream blusher maybe that you like?
Cream blusher. I think the one that comes to mind is from NARS, which is Orgasm, which was their very famous blush back in the day. I don't think I actually have a pot of that anymore, but I had it for years and years and years and loved it. And it actually, there's various different formulas available of that now. You can buy NARS Orgasm in a cream stick formula now instead of powder. And the other one actually is Clarins Beauty Flash Balm. That's another brilliant product. And they're all still around. They are still around and they are still as good as ever for doing what you need them to do. You know, these are not products that are trying to reinvent the wheel, but they deliver on what they say they're going to deliver on. So, you know, there's certain ones that are my fail safe. Like I'll never be without the Chanel bronzing cream or my L'Oreal mascara. Another one actually is MAC Ruby Woo lipstick. I think that is one of my all time favorites. And I love the stories behind products as well. So for example, MAC Ruby Woo lipstick was created completely by accident. The MAC formulation team were trying to tweak the formula of Russian Red, which was one of their very famous cool toned matte lipsticks. It had become very popular and famous because Madonna had worn it on one of her world tours and everybody loved it. And the sort of passion and interest in it drove MAC to try and make another, you know, version of Russian Red. I think they were trying to make it more wearable, if I remember, more comfortable or slightly matte. I can't remember what it was, but they were tweaking the formula and they created this other shade. And everyone thought, God, that's gorgeous. Maybe we should, yeah, let's. And they created Ruby Woo out of that. And everybody went nuts for Ruby Woo. It's still around. Everybody loves it. I wear it all the time. And every time I wear it, people say, oh my God, what is that lipstick? What are you wearing? It's nothing new. It's Ruby Woo.
So I mentioned the Irish women then, sculpted by Amy, and Pip O'Connor has now Coco Beauty. There's a couple of products you've mentioned recently and the power of Simone Gannon now selling out products straight away. But tell us about those two because they're particularly fond of them, I think, and they're new.
Yeah. So Pip O'Connor's beauty brand has really impressed me, I have to say, since its launch. It came out in, I think it was October or November it launched. And the first product they launched with is called Universal Glow Treatment. And it is kind of a multitasker. It is a primer that you can use before your makeup. It's a very sort of glowy base that helps to even out redness. You can wear on its own. You can mix with your foundation. You can use it sort of as a highlighter over your foundation. It's beautifully formulated, very fluid, just has beautiful results on the skin. The packaging is gorgeous. It's very affordable. It is kind of a brand that I, and a product that I would consider equal to very luxurious counterparts that you would see in Brown Thomas or wherever you're shopping. That's a brand that's really impressed me. And there's other products I've tried since then that Pippa has brought out. They have a bronzing sticks, highlight sticks, and they are beautiful. And they're less than €25. They are really well priced and again, beautifully formulated. So that's one brand that I love and that I'm very interested to see what they do in the next year or two. I'm very interested to see how they expand the line. And then Sculpted by Amy is just incredible. The expansion of that brand has just taken my breath away. Amy Connolly really is a powerhouse. And throughout the expansion and the growth of that brand, what's really impressed me is not once has the quality of the products changed. This is a woman who knows what she's doing as a makeup artist with her products, with her packaging, with the formulations. And incredibly, it's a brand that's managed to easily traverse several generations. You know, there's younger women passionate about Sculpted by Amy. There's middle-aged women, there's older women. It is a brand that works for everyone because it's very, I would class it as kind of subtle and natural and very enhancing. So it just gives you more. It makes you look like a better version of yourself. It makes your skin look like a glowier version. They're very light formulas and they're very very beautiful. And she's kind of branched into skincare now as well. And I love her skincare products. The moisturizer in particular is one of my favorites, Cloud Cream Moisturizer, very light. And again, she's kind of formulated these to sit alongside your makeup. So it's a moisturizer that also acts as a fantastic primer underneath. So that's another brand that I just love. And I think she's really kind of, as cheesy as this sounds, I think she's really done Ireland proud with Sculpted by Amy. It's a great brand. The formulations are excellent. You know, the products are beautiful. And again, it's very well priced.
Now, you were talking about crease-proof concealers recently. Do they exist? What was the one that you said was absolutely brilliant? Because I remember thinking, I better go out and buy that, but it's probably sold out now.
So the concealer I was raving about is from Laura Mercier. It is a new concealer. It came out in January. It's called Weightless Flawless Perfecting Concealer. And it's quite an interesting formula because it is a serum concealer hybrid. So in the way that we've seen that filter into foundation over the last 2 or 3 years, we are now getting it under our eyes as well, which is ideal because a lot of us, as we age, you know, we're dealing with more dryness, more crepiness around the eyes, hollowness and so on. And this concealer is just exquisite. It is buttery, it's creamy, it's light, it's very radiant. It nearly blends itself. It requires such little work, kind of glides on under the eyes and it stays in place and it's just beautiful. I love it. But saying that, in terms of creaseless, I just can't stand that term. It drives me absolutely mad. Crease proof, creaseless. There is no concealer that does not crease. There isn't one because it's our skin that's creasing. It's not the concealer. Like, I could rant and rave about this all day. You know, our skin is a constantly moving organ. It's hot, it's cold, it's tired, it's dry, and it's changing all the time and it's moving all the time. When you put something like concealer or foundation on top of your skin, if your skin is moving, your concealer will move. If your skin has fine lines and dryness, your concealer will sit in those fine lines and it might look a little bit dry. You know, there is no magic wand concealer, I'm afraid. You know, I wish there was, but I really hate that term because it's our skin that's creasing, you know, and as a result, our concealer creases.
Fair enough. Now, listen, Bobbi Brown did an interview in The Guardian recently and she said she'd spent her lifetime perfecting the natural look. We all know that look, the no makeup, makeup look, essentially. And that's kind of what's in at the moment, isn't it? Because, you know, we mentioned the Kardashians earlier and we kind of blame them for the contouring and all these young women going along with these brown sort of marks on their face. I don't want to be judging because I think, as I said earlier, we've all been there in our teenage years experimenting. Yeah. But there does seem to be a bit of a trend for, you know, people looking a bit more natural. Have you observed that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think we're seeing that in the new products and formulations that are hitting the market too. You know, they are very skin focused. They are loaded with benefits for our skin like never before. You know, they have hyaluronic acid, and niacinamide and vitamin C, and they are designed to make our skin feel as good as it looks. And I love that because I think we should be enhancing real skin, not covering it up. You know, I think skin is beautiful. And as we age, like I said, I love fine lines. I love movement and expression. And I think makeup should complement that. You know, it should brighten and sort of smooth and but not cover. You know, I know, obviously not saying that, like I do have full coverage concealers that I whack out every now and then when
I've
been out.
Tell me a couple of your favorite ones, because, you know, there are days like that when you do want to just cover it all up. Give me something really that's going to hide me.
One of my favorites is from NARS, and it is called Light Reflecting Foundation. So it's quite a glowy, I'd say medium to full coverage. It's quite glowy. And again, it's very skin-like, which, you know, links into what you were just saying a minute ago. Like it really has changed in that even with full coverage or medium coverage, we don't necessarily want that mask-like finish anymore. We still want it to look like skin. We're asking for a lot, really. We want full coverage that still looks like our skin. But I do think it's kind of going that way. You know, we're becoming more comfortable, as we should, with what real skin looks like. You know, all skin is beautiful and it should be celebrated. And I think a lot of brands in the industry are understanding that and bringing out products that accentuate without, you know, hiding.
Now, you were working and writing for The Examiner, and then you got to fill these very big shoes, Laura Kennedy's shoes. We've had Laura on the podcast a few times, yes, and we'll hopefully have you on more times during the year as well to talk about beauty. But a big job, and you're flying it. You seem to be doing really well, and the response from readers has been excellent. So tell us about the column, what you have planned, what things you're interested in. Will there be any more vampire facials or Botox or fillers or things like that? Because they're all things people like are much more mainstream now, I think, when it used to be a little bit of a shameful secret that people had. Yes. People are not ashamed of it anymore, and they're very open, yes, about talking about these things.
Yeah, 100%.
So where do you want the column to go?
For me personally, I sort of like experiencing, you know, what's new, what everyone's talking about for sure. I like investigating what's buzzy, what people are talking about. I want to understand, is this really good? Is this really worth the money? You know, is this worth recommending? Is this worth trying? And so from time to time, I will do pieces like that where I investigate what everybody is talking about and see whether it is good. I'm also really interested in regenerative treatments. So that fits into what we're talking about with the vampire facial. I'm really interested in treatments that work with what you have and help you get more of what you have. Treatments that boost collagen, boost elastin, and, you know, just kind of plump and rejuvenate the skin. So I'm really interested in investigating that category of treatments. One aspect of that that I have coming up that I'm possibly going to write about is a new type of regenerative, again, injectable treatment, and it's called polynucleotides. So polynucleotides is a biostimulator and very similar to PRP in that it is something that, you know, implores your cells to get back to work. So again, it's plumping, very rejuvenating. So that's something that I'm very interested in. And I see myself exploring that kind of wider category and speaking to experts and talking about what's new and what's coming and why we are making this huge surge towards regenerative treatments as opposed to, you know, in treatments that fill and freeze our face. Like, why are we so interested in regenerative? So that's something that I want to explore a lot. And then another thing I'm very into is the sort of high-end versus low-end argument across all categories of beauty. You know, where should we spend our money and why? And which products that are more expensive are worth it and why? And also highlighting some of the absolutely excellent products that are tucked away in our local pharmacies. You know, a lot of them cost less than 20 euro. So I really want to kind of share that information and share, you know, the knowledge about those products to show people that your money can go quite far, actually, and you can get some really great products for it. You don't always have to spend in order to get nice beauty products.
Well, I think that's brilliant, because when you mentioned earlier about those products for younger people, Acervia, I think you said it was?
Cervi.
Cervi. Yes. I'd never heard of it, and I will be recommending my daughters to go down to the chemist and have a look and see if it's there. And the fact that in Boots you can get it for 2 for 3, and especially with the cost of living crisis and people really being a bit more careful with where they spend their money, I think,
yes,
going into the little corners of the pharmacies around the country, and often there's great staff there who can kind of give you advice about
absolutely
things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the brands as well are doing a great job nowadays of communicating via social media mostly about how their products work, you know, and what to use and what they go with and how to introduce them to your routine. You know, they're empowering people like never before. We have so much information at our fingertips and we're much more equipped at knowing. You know, I feel like people are more comfortable now going into department stores or pharmacies and saying, well, okay, I need a new product, but I'm not exactly sure. And they're happy to walk around and read the labels and talk to the staff, because it's become more of an ongoing conversation now as opposed to like trying to make you buy whatever the latest thing that's on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and congratulations on your first couple of months with the Irish Times.
Thank you.
We look forward to reading more, and maybe you'll come back maybe towards the summertime and talk to us about things to bring on our holidays with us and how to kind of...
That would be wonderful.
I mean, it's great
to
wear less
that.
Makeup in the summer as well, and what other products we can use. So thank you so much, Simone Gannon, and the best of luck with all the beauty columns you have ahead.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Thanks again to Simone for joining us on the podcast. If you liked what you heard, please do leave us a review or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We love to hear from you, so contact us by email, thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com, or on social @ITWomensPodcast. This episode was produced by Suzanne Brennan and Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Talk to you next time.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.